From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News. Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week via Skype, Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, J.J. Green, National Security Correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA, and our moderator is Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor to the National Journal.
In the United States, we are in the final days of the 2020 national election. President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden are barnstorming the country, making their closing arguments to an electorate that remains highly polarized and unusually motivated. Early voting has been historic, with tens of millions of Americans already casting their ballots after waiting in line for hours. By the time we return to these microphones in a week, we should know whether Trump has been reelected to a second term or has been ousted by Biden, Barack Obama's vice president for 8 years, or perhaps not. The margins in many so-called battleground states are very narrow. It's entirely possible that a winner may not be known for a few days, and both sides have assembled legions of lawyers prepared to challenge the results on various grounds, including delays by the Postal Service, problems with electronic voting systems, or alleged voter suppression. The COVID-19 virus appears to be overshadowing other issues in the home stretch of this election. Trump contends the country is turning the corner on the pandemic, but new cases and hospitalizations are surging, and medical experts believe within 2 weeks higher death rates will occur. That has raised fears that a second national lockdown of restaurants, bars, and public places may have to be reinstated. In a political victory for President Trump, a deeply divided U.S. Senate confirmed Judge Amy Coney Barrett to be an associate justice on the Supreme Court, cementing a strong conservative majority for perhaps a generation. Justice Barrett is a favorite of many Republicans for her conservative views, and Trump hopes that Barrett will help him politically by energizing his base in the home stretch of the election. In yet another episode of racial unrest, Philadelphia police shot and killed a black man with a knife, sparking violent protests that police said injured 30 officers and led to dozens of arrests. Hundreds of people took to the streets to protest the shooting, with clashes between protesters and police turning violent at times. Well, this election, Linda, is quite like nothing else I think many of us have seen. This seems to me that we've had a four-year campaign, not a one-year campaign. In fact, President Trump announced for re-election early in 2017, not long after he was sworn in. He announced he'd be running again. This reminds me, actually, of October and November of 1976, when Gerald Ford, who was trailing badly to Democratic challenger Jimmy Carter, spent 10 full days on the road, scores of stops around the country without ever returning to Washington. We called him Marathon Man. Well, now Trump and Biden have got busy schedules. President has been up to four events in a single day. Linda, how's he doing in the last week? Is anything out there resonating in President Trump's favor at the moment?
The basic shape of the race really hasn't changed in quite some time. If the polls are to be believed at all, Donald Trump is trailing. He's trailing by significant margin nationally, which, of course, doesn't count. It's the Electoral College that counts. So it's the key battleground states that we're looking at. So the margin that Trump is ahead by in these key battleground states is bigger than what Hillary Clinton had 4 years ago. I know a lot of people are looking at the polls and looking at what happened 4 years ago and wondering if we're going to see the same thing where it looks like Donald Trump is going to lose and then he wins. This time, there's a little more of a margin. And even if the polls are off, there's a better chance that Joe Biden will win this time than compared with Hillary Clinton 4 years ago. But I can't stress enough how we're in uncharted territory here. We're having a pandemic where our economy is in bad shape, despite the GDP, the growth numbers that just came out, which shows strong growth, but that's after a big decline. We have a lot of people voting early. A third of the electorate, I believe, has already voted. And it's still several days before the election. So we just don't know in the end how this will affect the final result. And anybody who says they know what's going to happen is lying.
Both lying, ignorant, and perhaps stupid, or maybe all of the above. I mean, I've said it for years and years. Overnight is a lifetime in politics. And we have at least a few more days worth of lifetimes to go here. Things can often happen. And maybe there will still be more things to happen that even at this late day we don't know about. JJ, what is your sense of where this race stands? I agree with Linda that the polls show a steady Biden lead. And I also agree that things are a little bit different this time around. First of all, he was a challenger 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. This time he's an incumbent with 4 years of good things and bad things for people can judge whether they like what he's done or not. He has a record that he didn't have last time. And also Joe Biden is not as, how shall I put this delicately, hated by many Americans as Hillary Clinton. She was a poster child for the conservative left. Biden, his politics are probably not that much different than Hillary Clinton's, but he's not seen as a hater. He's not a divider. And so there are some differences, but again, anything can happen. So again, JJ, what's your sense of where this race stands today?
Well, Tom, thank you for the question. And as I've mentioned before on this program, I'm not able to comment on political matters and politically framed questions. So I'm going to have to speak from a national security perspective, and I can say that the country is in a very difficult position right now because of, one, all of the disinformation that's taking place, two, all of the overt acts and situations where people are confronting each other. There are situations where people who have been very well respected and revered in the education, in the political, in the intelligence, in the law enforcement community, in the entertainment communities, they're very strong and well-liked people that are, to be quite frank about it, losing it on Twitter, on social media, name calling. And this is precisely what the Kremlin wanted when it started its disinformation campaign many, many, many years ago. It wanted to turn Americans against each other and to force us to doubt our government, electoral and cultural systems. So as far as who wins this, as you both have said, who knows? But what I can say is that one thing that we've already lost is this ability to remain united, to put up a united front. But it can be restored. But right now, we're just in a really difficult national security place.
Well, it is tricky. I mean, Trump is the third president in a row who has not united the country. George W. Bush said, elect me, I'm a uniter, not a divider. That didn't work out. And Barack Obama came in and said, no, I'm a transformational president. I'm the person who can absolutely unite the country. That didn't work out either. And I think it's fair to say that President Trump has worked on polarizing things. So maybe we can hope that a second Trump term will be different, or a first Biden term will be different. We will see. COVID was supposed to go away, according to the president's predictions. It hasn't gone away. President Trump has said the virus would be gone by now. A vaccine would be ready by the election. Neither has happened. And he says on the campaign trail, Linda, that the country is rounding the turn in the battle against this virus. And Vice President Biden says, my grandfather used to say about things like this, he's rounding the bend. So whoever is right, it's pretty clear, I think, that the virus has not gone away. In the last week, there have been 500,000 new cases in the United States. Hospitalizations have jumped almost 10% since last month. More than 70,000 new cases have been reported a day for at least a week, and that is the highest level in history. Moreover, the virus is surging in 35 states, many of them so-called red states that are nominally Republican. How is this affecting the race, Linda? You get the feeling that this at the end?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been the number one issue in the campaign for a long time. And the fact that we're heading toward Election Day amid a terrible surge in the virus, I think just puts a punctuation point on it. And what's striking is the way Trump and Biden are handling this issue and the ways in which they're campaigning. I mean, Donald Trump, as you said, is barnstorming the country, having multiple rallies a day, inviting people, urging people to come to his rallies. He has them at airports. and they're outside, but a lot of people aren't wearing masks. They're standing very close to each other and they're risking infection. Whereas Joe Biden is not having rallies every day. He's not even having rallies. I mean, he's doing events, but he and Barack Obama are having these car rallies, which are kind of odd. I mean, it's just an odd addition to an odd election cycle where people come in their cars and then honk their horns when they like something that was said instead of cheering. But to me, it's a form of asymmetrical warfare. Donald Trump is all about generating excitement and enthusiasm around his campaign among his supporters. So these are people who already love him and we're going to vote for him anyway. And he's getting them to turn out in person. And of course, these are also shown on television, if maybe Fox News, the conservative network, or at least on C-SPAN. Whereas Joe Biden is running sort of a front porch campaign. Yes, he's traveling and he's going to important battleground states, but not nearly to the extent of Donald Trump. And you can argue that Joe Biden is being the responsible one, not encouraging people to come and stand near each other and not wear masks. You know, the question is, will Trump be rewarded for creating the appearance of enthusiasm while Joe Biden isn't?
I was reminded of something that a press official for President George H.W. Bush said at the end of the 1992 election, after Bush had lost to Bill Clinton. This official said, you know, I don't know how this happened. He said, our crowds were amazing. We'd be out there and they'd be the biggest crowds we'd ever had, the enthusiasm. And he says, you get out there and you get caught up in it and you think there's no way you'd lose. Mm-hmm. But we lost. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case here. There's no way to know. But it is true that the crowds, as you say, Linda, Trump's big crowds are, in effect, preaching to the choir. But, JJ, let me ask you to try to put a foreign policy spin on this. France and Germany have recently announced new lockdowns, pretty severe lockdowns. And European medical specialists are contending that within a few weeks, the United States will have to do lockdowns again. Normally, it's felt that the incubation period for this virus is about 2 weeks. So there's evidence that with these new surges, 70,000 a day for a week, that in a couple of weeks, or 3 weeks if you consider hospitalizations, there could be a spike in deaths. Do you think this country might be heading towards lockdowns again, which have proven to be very unpopular?
Yeah, without a doubt. We're in the fire now, and here's why. We had a situation where things calmed down, but we knew that they would once the doctors and scientists learned more about the virus, and we got the hospitalization situation under control and testing moved forward. But the problem that has pretty much people's COVID fatigue. People had just gotten tired of following the rules, and this is something that we Americans typically have had problems with throughout history, is following rules. And this is the situation we're facing now, because the one good thing about where we are now is that we're not starting from scratch, not knowing anything about this virus and not knowing how it's going to spread or transmit, but we're in almost a worse situation because we know how it goes, and some people have gotten complacent and comfortable with masks. It's actually interesting when you go into some places now, they have these rules about how many people can fit in an elevator. You shouldn't be surprised to see more than double that amount in the elevator. And I've seen it several times myself and declined to get into that elevator. But that's the big part of the problem. We're headed towards lockdowns again because, one, of people just being tired of following the rules, and two, there is this big confrontation between politics and science right now, which is not good for any part of the country.
Absolutely correct. I think it's time probably to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, J.J. Green, National Security Correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA, and our moderator is Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor to the National Journal.
And we just have a few minutes left, and I didn't want to leave without talking about a singular achievement for President Trump, whether you like it or not. Country seems to be divided as well, but the Senate confirmed his nomination to the Supreme Court of Judge, now Justice Amy Coney Barrett of Indiana. She's very conservative. This is a popular confirmation with conservatives and many Republicans, not so much at all for Democrats who think she's just too far to the right. The real question that I have, Linda, in the final days of this election, is there any sense that this is helping President Trump in this election, or is it kind of too little too late?
I think it helps him with the people who were already going to vote for him. It helps him with religious conservatives who are hopeful that she will vote to overturn the right to abortion when a relevant case comes before the court. It may be a question of converting people who didn't vote last time into voters this time. So I don't think anybody's mind has changed about Donald Trump. It's just a question of motivation and turnout. Who was inspired to turn out this time? You know, another thing I should say about the Supreme Court is that they did, in recent days, leave in place two decisions in lower courts that are involving battleground states and went against the Republican position to block ballot receipt extension. So there's a lot of legal wrangling going on right now over whether to extend the deadline to receive ballots after Election Day. And Republicans believe this is wrong. They think that the statutes in place should be followed. And Amy Coney Barrett did not participate in those cases, even though she was already on the court, because she had just joined the court and didn't have time to read up on those cases. But what this does is ensure that we're going to have litigation following the election, and it could delay knowing the result.
That, Linda, is an understatement. JJ, do you think that this is a political question, so I don't want to pose it to you, but I'm just curious as to whether you think that Barrett's nomination resonates with any others other than the president's political base.
Well, Tom, the Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett is now a member of the court, and it is awful difficult to say how she votes moving forward. We know what we think or what we've been told. We know what's likely. But if we think back throughout history, there have been more than one Supreme Court justice that did not vote the way people thought they would, that over time they changed the way they thought about things. And I don't know that this Supreme Court justice will be any different. What I do know is that we as a nation have to embrace laws, our rules, and our norms. And when we start not being willing to accept things that we don't like, but that are lawful, that's a path that creates bigger problems for the country. So there are going to be people that like what she says and how she does her work, and there are going to be people who don't. But I do think at the end of the day, what has to be important to everyone is to realize that we need to move on, regardless of who's put in positions and who's elected. But we need to move on and to make sure that we do everything that's necessary to make sure that the country as a whole stays strong. And I think people are willing to do that.
Well and eloquently spoken, JJ. I couldn't agree more. Finally, with a few more minutes, I want to talk about this new episode of racial unrest. Many of our listeners have known that over the spring and early fall, there have been many instances of racial discord, protests, not all racial, but some racial, a lot of questions about law and order in places like Portland, Oregon, the state of Wisconsin, and several places, and now in Philadelphia. In many of these cases, there are instances of a black man being wounded or black man or woman being killed. There was another one in Kentucky earlier this year. President Trump has tried to make this an issue of law and order, an issue that he had hoped would resonate with people. There has been a lot of anger in the streets. There was a rise in the so-called Black Lives Matter movement, but that ebbed and flowed. Linda, what is your sense of whether all of this, which is clearly unhelpful and difficult and in some cases very disturbing, Is any of this resonating in this election? How big of a cutting issue is it, or is it?
Well, it is a factor, but again, like many elements of this race, it could cut both ways. So you have the shooting of black men and women, the killing at the hands of police of black men and women, which inflames the entire country. It isn't just black people who are upset about this. I mean, I think all people of humanity and compassion think it's terrible. When, you know, in the case in Philadelphia, it was a man with mental problems. He was brandishing a knife. He was shot and killed. You know, and then that leads to unrest, not only in Philadelphia, but also I think in Brooklyn, there was also protests. Sometimes you end up with larger street violence. You get looting. You get just essentially lawlessness. So Donald Trump's gamble is that the lawlessness will frighten people in the suburbs, suburban women in particular. And he's doing terribly with suburban women. We're going to have the biggest gender gap, I think, in the history of gender gaps in this election. Women do not like Donald Trump to a much greater degree than men. Donald Trump thinks that scaring women with visions of urban unrest is going to make them vote for him. I mean, that may be true in some cases. I don't think it's going to work. But for Joe Biden, I think he's a reassuring figure. He's civil. He doesn't speak in, you know, these awful negative ways that, you know, if you're talking about women and they have their children listening to the president, they don't want their children to listen to Donald Trump because he's rude and profane. Ultimately, I don't know that these episodes of urban unrest are going to help Donald Trump in any way.
I should just interject here a short anecdote. I have a friend who's a member of his family is a woman who's running for the House of Representatives. And I called him the other day to ask how she's doing. And he said, look, it's very simple. Women in this district hate Trump. Mm-hmm. They like his policies, but they hate him. And we're going to have to run 6 or 7 points better than President Trump to have a chance to win this election. That's how polarizing he is with yeah. women. Mm-hmm. And that is not an isolated situation. JJ, tell us about the possibility that foreign actors are exploiting this unrest, this civil unrest, in a way to throw some turmoil into this whole situation at the end.
Well, Tom, again, thank you for the question. But to be brief about it, it's very obvious. When you look at what's taken place in the last few weeks where people have gotten emails, where people have gotten text and robocalls from someone or some organization saying, vote Trump or else, we're coming after you. We will know how you voted. This is clearly the work of a foreign actor because no American that actually knows how the voting process works in the U.S. is going to try to pull that because there is no way that anyone can tell how you voted when you step into a voting booth except that you tell them. There is no way for any group, whether it's an extremist group on the right or the left, to know how you voted. So to take that approach and to have the resources to reach out to so many different people, it's all about a hack. It's all about foreign actors' power, their skill sets, their sophistication. And this tells you just how important this election is to people who actually reside in those circles. So there's a lot of that going on. It's not new. It's going to continue. But I do think Americans now understand a lot better how this works than we did in 2016.
Well, let us hope so. For the sake of democracy, for the sake of humanity, for the sake of interpersonal relations, for the sake of all of us, let us hope that is the case. I think you're right, and I certainly hope so. That's all the time we have. Thank you again for Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, J.J. Green, National Security Correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA. This program is produced by the Voice of America. I'm Tom DeFranco.